All right, so if you have the sheets that were sent in the WhatsApp group or the Sefer, we're on Kuf Pei Vav, which is in the middle of Perek Shvi'i. We'll finish that Perek, and we'll also do Perek Shmini. We're in between kind of two chapters, so we'll try to not go too long, but hopefully we can get both of them, and they're both really, really important. So if you recall, we ended last week's shiur with a... let me stay back. Before we get to how we ended last week's shiur. Last week's shiur, the chapter, if you recall, was one of the heavier ones, not so typical of the Sefer. It was more old-school Musar, in the sense that the whole premise of the piece was, after having spent chapters and chapters talking about what it means to get to know yourself and how that's the most important thing, to be self-aware. So he basically said, you know, now that we've done that, we have to realize that it's not all going to be pretty. And that not only that, if we're really being honest about ourselves, not only are we going to notice all sorts of incidental or small or minor problems, but there was that particular paragraph that if you think about it too much, it'll give you nightmares, where he says if you really go deep, 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 it's not just that you may have a form of ka'as, but you hate everybody. And it's not just that you have a little bit of an ego. You actually really think that you're the best that ever was. And it's not just that you're not so grateful. It's that you think no one's ever done anything good for you, etc. Anyway, it was pretty heavy. But then he had a Gemara, which he mentioned, and this was kind of would be the pivot. He had a Gemara that he mentioned at the end of last week's learning, Kedushin Daf Lamed Amud Beis, which talked about how every day the Yetzer Hara renews itself, different strategies, and every day the Yetzer is miskaber, it gets stronger. And he talked about the difference between those two things. And then the last line of the Gemara, which is exactly how today's chapter picks up, is the Gemara itself says, so we're overwhelming, a new Yetzer Hara every day, a stronger Yetzer Hara every day, ilmalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ozro, ein yachol lomar. And if a person wouldn't have Hashem to help him, you'd have no choice, you'd have no hope. Okay, that's the Gemara, and we didn't pick up on that. So now we're on page Kuf Pei Vav by the three dots. So now you see that quote: "Il Malei Hashem Hakadosh Baruch Hu Ozro." That was okay. Well, if the Yetzer Hara is so powerful, the Yetzer Hara is so unrelenting, how are we going to do it? So says Rav Olvi as follows: "Bala Tahir." This is, he doesn't quote it, but this is from another Gemara. The Gemara has an idea: "Habala Tahir," someone who is trying, someone who wants to be good, someone who wants to purify himself. Messiah or so, Hashem will help him. Ein Lenu El Elios Ruuyim L'Siyua. And it's our job, and this is remind me of something that we learned not long ago in Rav Tzadok during the week, which is that there's so many things that are out of our control, and the biggest one often is success. There's so many reasons why a person could be successful or not successful, get the job, not get the job, get the client, get the contract, get the girl, okay, get the boy, that stuff is often out of our hands. But making our, doing what's necessary so that hopefully if Hashem wants, he doesn't need a miracle. You want to be in a situation which, in order to get what you wanted, Hashem doesn't have to split the Yam Suf. Because you may not be worthy of that kind of miracle. But a teensy weensy insy bitsy Hashkacha Pratis you might be worthy of. So if you put yourself in a situation where all success needs is a teeny weeny 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 wink from Hashem, you're much more likely to get it. This is the metaphysical, spiritual, grand version of, better shooters get the good bounce. Right, a lot of luck in being a good, somehow it's always the best shooters who get the lucky bounces. Right, you have to put yourself in a situation where luck will, we have a better chance at luck, so to speak. This is what he's saying here. Our job is to make ourselves ra'ui for Hashem to help. Right, if we just sit back on the couch and just, but Hashem could give me $1 million. He's more likely if you're working, 80 hours a week and, busted yourself to get to the right job and the right school and the right whatever. And then maybe, you still might not get the job because someone else might get the promotion. Or it might be that you put all this time in and you worked up and it turns out that you were the best record producer ever, but now no one buys records, so who cares? You were in this business and there's so many things out of your hands. But if you have to put yourself in a situation where at least it's likely, right? So that's what he says on a spiritual level. That's what the Gemara is saying. You have to be ra'ui l'siyua. Now, what does it mean to be ra'ui l'siyua in this sense? So take a look. He has a very powerful line that he quotes from his Rebbe. We haven't seen him in a while, but when he quotes him, you could hear the awe that he has, even from the paper, his great Rebbe, Rabbi Rucham, the great Mashkiach of the Mir. So what does it mean? He says right below, Mihu tzadik umihu rasha. What does it mean to be that kind of person who deserves Hashem's help, to be a tzadik in that sense? So he says in the next paragraph, Regilin anu lahavin ki tzadik umisha enu chote. Right? Intuitively, we think, oh yeah, tzadik means the person who's perfect, who never sins. The rasha is the person who does sin. But he says, on the other hand, we all know that's infantile and juvenile, right? Because after all, every tzaddik also sins sometimes, and every rasha sometimes does mitzvos. So what makes a person a Rasha? What makes a person a Tzaddik? So here's a one-liner for you, and you can see how he thinks how important it is, because he changed the font. Or I guess he, I'm sure, I assume it was his decision. Hayisodhu, and this is what he's quoting from Rav Yeruchim Lubavitz, Tzaddiku hakam neged Yitzrov omen lenegdo. Rasha ain omen mineged liyitzrov. Right, which is basically a saying, it's all about effort. In other words, a tzaddik is someone who's fighting the good fight. You're omen against your yitzrov, you're actually trying. Sometimes you're going to fall, but you're still, in that sense, you're a tzaddik. Someone who's not even trying, who just says, you know, wherever the waves take me, I'm a piece of driftwood, and I'm just going to go along with wherever the yitzrov takes me, whatever the waves of society tell me to do, that's what I'm going to do. And again, most people are sheep. Right? They don't think about anything. So that's a Russia. They might happen to do good things, but there's no person in it. They're just going along. This is a very simple definition. A tzaddik who come neged Yitzro, and he says something amazing. He points out there's a wild Gemara. The Gemara is in Yuma Daf Pei Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara is actually talking about. I'll paraphrase it: a pregnant woman who passes by a bakery, something, and the food, you can smell the food on Yom Kippur, and all of a sudden she gets this unbelievable appetite, to eat, or all of a sudden the baby starts kicking like crazy. So now they go to the rabbi, you know, can she break her fast or not? So if you zoom out, and you're not like, you know, an Amora or you're not in the Gemara, yeah, a pregnant woman who's all of a sudden having a lot of kicking and, you know, stomach pains or whatever, you tell her, of course she would break her fast on Yom Kippur. But in the particular story, so it was, they went to which Amora did they say that? I think they went to... They went to Rebbe. Right, so they went to Rebbe. I was looking for the name of who they went to. And Rebbe said, basically, whisper, you know, into the ear, so sort of whisper as if to the baby, to the mother's stomach, if you will, whisper that it's Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says that it happened, and all of a sudden the baby stopped kicking. And right away, so the Rebbe said, this baby is going to be a tzaddik, and sure enough, it was Rabbi Yochanan. Another time it happened, and she didn't pass the bakery, a different woman went past the pizza shop, baby's kicking, they tried to do the same trick, the baby's still kicking like crazy, and I said, okay, so feed him. And it turned out that child ended up being a horrible Rasha. That's a Gemara. So whatever you're thinking, that's what Rav Volbi says. But this doesn't make any sense. If you look at the next paragraph, Hadvarim nifloim, v'chi ubar hu bal b'chira. We're social. The baby, you know, let's assume, which is, you know, not exactly scientific, but let's assume the baby really was kicking because of the smell of the food. But even if that's true, one baby decided, oh, okay, it's Yom Kippur, I'm going to stop kicking as a preborn, not even a baby yet, and that determined that 70 years later he's Rabbi Yochanan, 50 years later he's Rabbi Yochanan, the baby's not a Baal Bechira. What credit does the baby deserve? Or in the opposite direction, this baby who really was kicking, and the baby really was so hungry, again, even if you assume that the baby's kicking because of the smell of the mother, let's just, even if, it still doesn't make any sense. V'chidaslo, v'havana, the baby knows what's happening, the baby's a baby. And again, not even a baby. So what do you see from this? El shehivchin rebi, v'ubar zeh, ki kochik hit nagdut lo, shar hit apek, u'bezehu noe liot tzadik, u'ubar shaloit nagei lo'ota, Litavato, Harin Edarmi Meno Hahit Abkut. Vivchin Bo Rabbi Hanina Hanania Koach Zeshal Zarut Mibatan. So this is again, it's very symbolic. It's hard to take it literally, but I think it's still a very good symbolic interpretation of the Gemara. Right? And you see this in a lot of Gemaras where you'll have a certain Amora or a Tana predict greatness out of a child, or in this case even a preborn, out of something small. Right? There's a famous Gemara we talk about on Tisha B'Av, right, where he's waiting outside the Roman jail and he says a pasuk, half a pasuk, and the little kid finishes the pasuk and he says, I know this is going to be one day a big pasuk, and it ends up becoming Rishma Kon Gadol. Like, he can finish a pasuk? He knew one pasuk on Chumash and that made it. So a lot of times the Amoras, you know, they had a sense, they had a knack, right? If you're in the business, you can sometimes tell with a very small thing, so to speak. So here, what he's saying, symbolically, what the Gemara is trying to convey is that this exact point, what he called the koach of the hiknagdut, the ability to overcome. In other words, the instinct to start kicking, if you will, to desire when you have a certain hana, whether it's the smell of food or any other hana, that everybody has. That doesn't separate the good guys from the bad guys at all. But once you've already been turned on, once you've already been motivated, once you already want the thing, you already saw the thing, to be able to stop, to be able to have that pause and say, one second, no, this is not what I should do. It's not better for me. That's a tzaddik. If a person has that, they'll become more this, a little more that. But you could, this is going to be success. And the person who doesn't have that, who just gives in, it's not their fault. But it doesn't matter. They don't have that self-control. Once you can predict that, you know this is not going to be a successful person. That's the essence of the Gemara. And I think that is really quite amazing. And look, just finish this point, the last paragraph. Kimat ve'ein lanu la'asot yoter. There's not many, much more we can do. Ki ein ze b'kochenu l'natzcho. We don't always have the ability, to really overcome the Yetzer Hara. As the Gemara itself said, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro, ein yocholo. So what is in our hands? Rak zot. La'amod kenegdo betokef, to do our best to fight. Lo letzayis lo b'shom open, not to listen to the Yetzer Hara. Ulifrok ol shiltono me'aleinu. Right, we have to stand up. We have to shout out. We have to try to fight back. We'll be sometimes successful, sometimes less successful. Or, and this is a point we also know intuitively, and we've discussed this in previous shiurim, in previous chapters. You know, there are times where you can avoid putting yourself in the situation. Right? So that also could be in a person's hands. It could very well be that once you're in the situation, it's not your fault. But you didn't always have to put yourself in the situation. Right? Sometimes that's your responsibility. But even in this case, he says, okay, you're in the situation. You have the temptation. You're in the job, and this is what's happening at the office. Right? So whether you're going to always do the right thing is almost impossible to say you're never going to make a mistake. But are you always trying? Are you always trying to fight? Or are you just giving in to anything? That is much more of an indicator. Now he says, now as we mentioned, as I said before, I was talking about the baby, right? The baby as a metaphor, right? When you have that temptation, you know, again, do you just give into it? Or do you try to figure out some way, some strategy where you can kind of take a step back and say, one second, is this right for me? Is this good for me? Do I really want this? Is this what I should be doing? So how does a person, what would give a person ability to be able to do that? Right, which is another way of saying what's going to make a person a human, not an animal. So it says here at the end, after the next three dots at the bottom of the page, Hadvar Mamurim B'Tamid Chacham, Hamushrosh Heitiv Eitzek HaTorah, HaTorah Hi Olam HaSeichel, V'Chol HaNilkat Va, Karov L'Gishah Sechlit B'Chol Nyano. So I don't know if you have, again, I think the bigger Talmud Chacham you are, the better. But I don't think he's saying it's either you're Talmud Chacham or you're a loser. What he's saying is, what will help a person be able to do this is Torah, and it's his knowledge. And we saw this in the previous year, right? Or again, I'm going back and forth in my mind between our Rav Tzadok Shirim during the week and this year. I can't remember which one we said it in more recently, but I think it was in Rav Tzadok Shirim, right? That Rav Tzadok had a whole piece on basically knowledge is power, right? The more you know something, the more you know, the more knowledge you have, the more control you have over in any situation. And therefore, in this case, he's not just saying knowledge like halachic knowledge, but also something that's very interesting. You know, there's a certain trend. I think it's probably a general societal trend. I think, but it's definitely seeped into the from world, which is anti-intellectual. Right? The more mystical, the more this, the more I say this not as someone who's anti-mystical things or anti-spiritual things or anti-emotion, but it's like in life, the pendulum is always going back and forth in intellectual history. So the response to, in the last 25, 30 years of whatever people thought was too hyper-rational in the generation before that, so it became now, to celebrate almost anti-rationalism. And, that was such a great Dvar Torah because I didn't understand it. It must have been amazing. I know what he said, but that's amazing. I got to go to that shul. I got to go to that yeshiva. I got to go listen to that rabbi. I got to, that kind of stuff. It exists. We all know. Again, it's not just, it's one thing to say I enjoy a tish, I enjoy a shal shudas. It's another thing to build your entire Yiddishkeit over that and celebrate the fact that I don't learn Gemara, so to speak, right? This extreme, again, I'm painting a caricature, but I think I've had enough dots I can tell by your eyes. You know what I'm talking about. So Ravolbi is mamish not like that. I don't know if he's as popular as he used to be. Maybe I'd have to ask the young kids. He's very intellectual. And it's his mussar. You can't be firmer than him. But it's a very intellectual Musar. He's always talking about the importance of your mind and being in control and being able to think things through. And this is we've seen this more than once over the last 3 years. But this is another example of it. And again, he talks about in the next paragraph how the seichel of the Torah eno chiver umfshat. It's not abstract or pale. Elachai ubari. There's a certain das Torah, not in the cliche sense, but a person you train your mind. I mean, my son Aaron, I've mentioned in the past that this past year, until very, very recently, he was basically full time in like the top chutz l'aretz shir in Yeshiva HaKotel as a 12th grader. Me and a friend were going every day to learn in Rabbi Jesse Horn's shiur. Wonderful shiur, great Rebbe, a very lomdish, kind of brisker style shiur, way above what a typical high school kid would be doing in the 12th grade. And he loves it. And more recently, he says to me something about how, like, he looks at everything differently now. Like, because, you know, life is a hakir. In other words, the skills you learn, how to break down a Gemara, how to break down a sugya, how you analyze a Rambam, those are thinking skills. You can apply those critical skills, those analytic skills, to anything. And again, he's just at the beginning of his journey. But on his level, he already was, I was amazed that he already saw that. It wasn't just that he was enjoying it in the Gemara and in the Rambam. He actually felt himself doing it in conversations with his friends, and he would be getting upset. He'd have some, you know, high school level debate with one of his friends, whatever the topic is, and like he was so upset that they were being too simplistic. Like they didn't see it could be two, it could be this and this. How, don't they know what two dinim are? Like not everything is the one or the other. There could be, things could be complex. There could be two things happening at once. Like all of a sudden things are like, you know, it. So that's what we're always talking about at the bottom of this piece. That the more Torah you learn, the more intellectual skills you have, the more weapons you'll have in your arsenal to be able to, again, use your mind over your Yetzirah, over your lust. Now again, if your mind wants to do the bad thing too, so then you might as well just, you know, call the morgue, you're done. Right? But he's working with the assumption that, no, it's your passions and your taiva that'll want the thing, but intellectually you may know it's wrong. Right? So having a strategy of how this only comes from a person who's learning Torah. Again, he's referencing here in the bottom paragraph of this page other things we've been learning over the last year about. We had whole chapters about, even mentioned it last week. Dimayon, fantasy. In other words, how do you pull yourself out of the fantasy world and back into the real world, real world, etc. So all of that, he says, you need Hashem's help, and Hashem's help. You know, the kli that Hashem is going to most likely help you with is through Torah. Okay, turn over to the next page, the top of page Kuf Pei Zayin. You see at the end of this chapter, he just summarizes it. He says, "Im lo haya lanu hechrech acher lasok b'Torah elazeh dayenu." Said Rav Volbi, this what I'm telling you now is so important. He said, "If there would be no other reason to learn Torah than just this, that already would be enough." There's other reasons to learn Torah. It's actually a mitzvah. If you learn Torah, you know what to do. How you supposed to know what to do on Shabbos if you don't learn the halachos? There's other reasons to learn Torah. Says, but this itself is a reason in of itself. This is enough of a reason in of itself. Because the healthiest person is a person who's learning Torah the right way. Because the person, which is his way of saying, who person, because that person's going to have self-control. He's going to be a human being. He'll be happy. Again, if you're learning Torah and your Torah is making you miserable, either you're not learning the Torah right, you're doing it, or you might have a mental health problem. And those are both the real things. But a healthy person, thank God, who is learning in the right way, there should be a simchas achayim. And all of a sudden now, he has a way of thinking of the world. And he has critical thinking skills. And he's not going to be a slave to his passions. You add up all those benefits. Forget in the next world. Think just in this world. You'd be a happier, healthier, more menschlich person. She says, if there was no other reason to learn Torah, even that, it would already be enough. It's a good life hack. Okay, now we have that's half of today's shiur. Second half of today's shiur, we'll quickly try to go through what is a shorter chapter, which is Perek Shmini. And he begins Perek Shmini by quoting from the Rambam. The Rambam in Shmona Prakim. I just finished last week. I have a weekly chavrusa with someone who had been in my shul in Baltimore. And I'm trying to remember. I think we started this when I was still a rabbi in Baltimore. We used to have a once a week chavrusa. But we definitely, in the 14 years I've lived in Israel, I believe pretty much every year we kept up, it used to be through Zoom, long distance, and then he made Aliyah to Modi'in, but he still goes back and forth a lot to Baltimore, so it's always through Zoom. I don't know if I can't remember, it's been 14 years probably since we learned in person together, but we almost every week we learned together, and we've learned different Sfarim over the years, and we went through all of the Hakdamos of the Rambam over the last year. So we actually just finished Shmona Prakim last week. So here you have in Perek Zayin, thank you. Here we have in Perek Zayin of Shmona Prakim. Again, there are a lot of things that are famous about Shmona Prakim, but this is one of them in which the Rambam says as follows: Yesh b'nevi'im mishi yira Hashem Yisbarach me'acharei machitzot rabot u'mehem mishi yiro me'acharei machitzot mu'atot. So you might think, what does this have to do with me? The Rambam is talking about different levels of nevuah, and there's this level and that level, and then of course there's Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the highest level. So I'm not a Navi, you're not a Navi, I take it back. I know I'm not a Navi. I'm assuming that you're not a Navi, but you don't, maybe with somebody in the room is. Okay, but I know I'm not a Navi, that I can tell you. So why is this relevant? Because the Rambam, it's an adjacent, if you will. What the Rambam describes is how a Navi gets to a higher level is going to be relevant to us who are trying to get to our own higher levels, even without being a Navi. And the Rambam, it's very fascinating. You know, if it's true that Ravolbi is, I mentioned before, kind of putting a little intellectualism and rational is a good, is a good antidote for some of the anti-rationalism, anti-thinking stuff we have nowadays. So this Rambam, we think of the Rambam, and for good reason, incorrectly, as being, the grandfather, the godfather of the more rationalist approach to Yiddishkeit. But the Rambam in this piece is using language. Again, this is the part of the proof that I would say that it's not really, if you do it right, it's not a contradiction. You're actually supposed to have both. But the Rambam in this piece actually has language, which is the kind of language that, you would hear or Moshe Weinberger using, or a Hasidic Rebbe using, or what do they call now? They made up a new word, mashpia. Somehow I got thrown, even went through Kol without ever hearing the word mashpia. And now it became like the most important thing in Judaism. There's Moshe Rabbeinu, then there's the mashpiyim. Every yeshiva has to have a mashpia. Okay, I'm venting, sorry. Anyway, so I don't know what mashpiyas are, but I know that sometimes you see this is the mashpia of NCSY, and this is the mashpia of camp this, and this is the mashpia of yeshiva that. So all those kind of people who are not the people who are usually quoting Ravolbi, they're in the more non-rationalist approach that's very popular these days, more emotional, neo-Hasidic, whatever you want to call it. So they will often use a language that's already in this Rambam, which the Rambam talks about there being mechitzas in between us and Hashem. Right? The goal in life is to be close to Hashem. And the Rambam uses this language. It wasn't found made up at a Tishnei Tzitzis Kolel. This is from the Rambam Mishmar Prakim. That there can be mechitzas. There can be, obviously it's metaphoric, but there are barriers, like a mechitza. And not a mechitza like in a super modern shul. Like a really big mechitza, like a Hasidish shtivel mechitza, like to the ceiling mechitza. There are real mechitzas that can separate us between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the language that the Rambam chooses to use when he says that. What was the difference between this Navi and that Navi? Not his IQ test, not what he got on the Bechina. This guy was a Navi. We're already talking about the 1% of the 1%. He's a Navi. But he had five mechitzas in between him and Hashem, so therefore he only had Nevu on that level. And this one... And Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who got closest. He had front row seats, He got the closest to Hashem. But the distance was the mechitzos. And if you look through the piece, we're not going to read the whole thing, but the Rambam talks about how, what are the mechitzos? So look, this is also the one sentence we'll do inside, which is very important, and you see the combination, four lines down. What are these mechitzos? Or what are the milas? This says you can have a mila that brings you close to Hashem, or the mechitza. So he says, whether it's the milas or the mechitzos, or what he called the pchitiot, mehen malos sichliot, umehen malos hamidos. Mehen pchitiot ha-sichliot, umehen pchitiot hamidos. It's true, yes, of course. In the Rambam's conception of the world, intellectualism is very important. That's the whole the Rambam's whole view of prophecy is intellectual perfection. So the Rambam's certainly not running away from that. He's leaning into his stereotype, 100%. But the Rambam adds that it's also character traits. A person who has bad midos, they could be the biggest genius, they can all the Torah, but a person who has bad midos, the bad midos themselves are a form of mechitzos that are preventing him and keeping him away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you see here, skipping down to the next paragraph, the Ravolbi summarizing. What the Rambam here is describing is, what is Kiruv Elokim and what is Richuk? Kol mida ra'ah, mechitzahi, beinenu levein Hashem. Kfi ribu hamidos, ha-ra'os ba'adam, Riba machitzos hamafsikos beino uvein kono. Right, the more bad midos a person has, the further they're going to be from Hashem, and therefore the less likely or the harder it will be for him to help us. Going back to the previous chapter, where in the end we said we have to do our part, and then we have to hope that Hashem is willing to help us and bless our efforts with success. But the closer we are to Hashem, the easier it is for him to help us. Right? Sometimes every one of us in the room who is a parent has had the experience, especially with older kids for sure, where you're at work or you're at home, and your child, who's whether he's in school or could be very far away or an issue, calls you with a problem. And the parents, sometimes you're thinking it, but a lot of times you even say it, I'm not there, I can't help you. Then you can start problem solving with your child, who can't help you, what's the situation. But often, right, it's not unhealthy that a child's first instinct is to call mom or dad. Right, but if they're far away, they can't always help. So basically, if there's a lot of mechitzos between you and Hashem, you need His help. We said there's nothing; no one can do anything on their own, 100%. Right? That was the premise at the end of the last chapter. So the farther you are, you don't want that many mechitzos. You don't want to be that far. You don't want to be able to be on. You don't want to be in a crisis and you call up Hashem, Dad, Tata in Himmel, as the saying goes, and He says, "I'd love to help, but I'm far away. Maybe someone close can help you." Right? That you know, I love to help. Of course I want to help you, but I'm too far. So you want to keep Hashem close. And he says here, again, so learning, the intellectual part, but also the midos tovos. Next paragraph. Kirbas Elokim, einenu inyan shel regesh. Okay, hot take. Right? That was a shot fired across the bow at the extreme of the neo-Hasidic bell curve. It's not just about emotion. You can have all the nice emotion and all the right passion. That's not enough. Elo shviras machitzos. You have to actually, there has to be substance there. Yes, you can. The language of, you know, you want to be close to Hashem and you don't want to have a machitza, which again is popular in certain circles. There's nothing wrong with that language. It was invented by the Rambam, not them. It's a healthy one. But they have to realize it's not just the best singer and not the guy who's just the best at the kumzitz. Again, there's nothing wrong with those things. They're wonderful. But there has to be a little meat on the bone. It can't just be sizzled. There's got to be some steak. And the substance is important, says Rav Volbi. That's what's going to bring down mechitzas. Now, the substance is not only learning and not only intellectual. Character traits are at least as important. He said there's two things which either build or take down mechitzos. Regesh shel kirvas habore hamit orer bekirbeinu beikvos nitzachon al atzmeinu zeo regesh amiti shein yad dimayon beemsa. And that makes a second point, which is so important. One of the reasons why in Avodas Hashem, or for that matter, life, that's built on the foundation of emotions is that you can never tell what's real and what's not real, and what's going to last and what's not going to last. I don't know if I ever talk about this with my Talmidim publicly, but sometimes in one-on-one conversations, I have, even before I saw this piece inside, I have intuited it. It's very much, the reason I'm passionate about this is that you know, corresponds to my own biases and my own orientation of some kind of more of a combination of the two and not one extreme or the other. And I've mentioned to my Talmidim that as much as it's important to have the good kumzit to the good whatever, that's like a sugar rush or a caffeine high. It's exciting. It doesn't help you go to mincha the next morning or the next day. It won't help you in afternoon seder the next day. It has a short shelf life. Plus also, you never know if it's real or not. Or by feeling, you know, again, and this is, you know, I'll ask a question which could haunt people if you really are, if it's something that would bother you. But like, how do you know the difference between, you know, what they're feeling, you know, at the best Hasidic Tisht and what they were feeling at the Nova Festival before the terrorists showed up? Which, God bless them, they're all Kedoshim at this point. But a minute before the terrorists came, they were doing things that were very far from Kedusha with all sorts of help from artificial stimulants, etc. That's what was happening there. So what's this person loves singing, that person loves singing. This person's at in a mosh pit at a concert, and this person's at a mosh pit called a tish with the Rebbe. So if it's all emotion, it's not always easy to tell what's real, what's not real, what's spiritual versus just what's self-indulgent and pleasurable. Right? So you need the more concrete, substantive stuff to really give kind of a ballast and to hold us down. Okay, I know we're going long, but let me, if you'll indulge me, I promise it'll be worth it. Let's just do one or two more points at the on the page, and then we'll do a little bit on the next page. This last paragraph, he says here that one of the things that we often forget about when we're just, and this is why he thinks that learning is so important, because it gives us the, you know, the do's and the don'ts, is that in our day and age, he says, what has we have lost from us, last paragraph, ki muchrachim losur meira. There's just such a focus on positivity, which again, on balance, may be the right way to do things nowadays. But we can't forget about the fact that there's bad in the world, there's bad in our hearts. That was last week's year. And we have to be able to do something about it. If you don't acknowledge that, you can't just build good, 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 good. Unless it's going to be in a strategy in which it's going to topple the bad. Because as long as there's a machitza, you could build all the good stuff you want, but it's still on the wrong side of the fence. You got to bring down the fence to get close to Hashem. And the fence is your Averos or your Yetzirah. And he's very, very strong on the fact that we can't only say, oh, this is good, this is good, this is good. We have to also somehow, you know, we have to be bracing enough to confront the fact that there is bad in the world as well. Okay, let's turn to the page, and we'll just do one last point, if you don't mind. So if you took the last page, Kuf Pechet, he has a Medrash there. And the Medrash is talking about Avram Avinu. How did Avram Avinu, according to the Medrash, find God at 3?
Palace.
So there's a lot of different Mishalim. One is about the burning palace, or the palace was built, who built the palace. But in one of them, this is not as well known medrash, he quotes here, he says that this is the very fascinating medrash, that the medrash describes the Yetzirah was stopping people in that generation until him. And he somehow overcame the Yetzirah. But the medrash has a very fascinating parable, symbolism. The medrash says, what was the Yetzirah like? Like a paper tiger, like these bandits. Like a mob or a gang, if you will, that's waiting on the highway, and they look real tough, but they're paper tigers. And they scare, you know, they jam the thing into your back. It's really their finger. There's no actual gun, but they intimidated people into. And then it was Avraham Avinu who just kept on going, and even though it looked scary, but it turns out it was all fake. It was a bluff. There was no there. There was no tiger. It was easy. Now, so Zerubbabel, what you see from this basically is, once you have the in Echanami, he says, Avram at three, how intellectually developed could he have been? Again, this is this version of the matter. He says, but he had the character traits already at a young age. There were no machitzos. And once you realize that the Yetzirah and all that stuff is trying to sell you, the big house, the big car, the money, the covet, all that stuff, it's not real. It's not actually important. It's as attractive as those robbers looked scary, but there were no bullets in the gun. It was a bluff. Again, now we know in life, like in gambling, right? A lot of people make a lot of money because they're good at bluffing. That's a skill. But you know what's even a better skill? To tell when the other guy's be able to bluffing. To know when they're bluffing. So this is the Yetzirah is one big bluff. And how was Avram was able to tell that, not because of his intellectual abilities, but because of his character traits. He was close enough to Hashem that he could see the truth. And we'll just do one last paragraph. This is the last thing we'll do inside. We're really, really almost done. Look below. Kol asher ha-seichel mitchazek yoter, yit'ameitz yoter laharos mechitzos losur meira. Right? The more we develop ourselves, the character traits and our learning and the way we think. Again, he's not using the word seichel here in the sense of like, I'm good at, you know, five nekudot in math. He doesn't mean that. He means you have a seichel that's been developed by Torah. You know how to think. You know how to be critical. You know what's important in life because you have the right inputs. Then you'll be able to destroy more machitzos. I get closer to Hashem. Avoda miyuchedes hi avureinu. Litragel basur meira luvaseset chayenu aidias hara vasalida mimeno. You have to know who the enemy is. You have to know what the bad is. Torah will help you do that. Torah helps you identify. Torah will give you the strategy how to overcome it. Shotan hayetzer olam hadimayon omidos ros. Whether it's the Yetzirah just attracting us, whether it's the world of fantasy, bad midos, hasagas hatov v'haregesh hatova taveno me'alein. If we'll do that, this is his basic insight. I'm rushing at the end now. I'm sorry, but this is so important. If we'll do that, he's trying to say, what we see from Avram is the good is already there. The good is there. We have an Hashem inside of us. Our default settings from the our factory settings are to be close to Hashem. Except that all these mechitzos got in the way. So what he's advising now is a strategy of removing those mechitzos, and then memela the water comes rushing in. You don't have to build a thing. The water, it's all there. There's just something holding it back. If we can work on identifying what those character traits are that we have that aren't as good, where the weaknesses are, where the gaps are in our protection and our coverage, if we can work on those, then everything will come naturally. And then it becomes circular in the best sense of the word. You remove a machitza, more good comes in. All right, all that power is going to knock down the next dam. And then you move that, it's going to knock down the next dam. Then the closer you get. But if you don't have the Torah, the character refinement, and again, I have to repeat this one final time, which is that, again, the whole piece and really the whole sefer is hyper-intellectual in the sense of focusing on seichel and not being irrational and not just following your emotions blindly. That's the opposite of Musar. Musar is about control, and you need to be more intellectual to be in control, not just following your passions. But at the same time as it's hyper-intellectual, what's the goal of the intellectual? Kirvas Elokim. Getting rid of mechitzas. It's not intellectual for the sake of being intellectual. It's not smart for the sake of smart. I just make good chakiras because it's fun. You do it because that is a way of helping train your mind, train your heart to get closer to Hashem. Halavai.